Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Our guest is Luba Vikansky. She's author of Immunity, How Eli Metchnikoff Changed the Course of Modern Medicine. And this is a story that is not merely of some remote historical significance. It's nice to read about how science developed, but it's rife with relevance to some important concepts that are popular in modern integrative medicine. The microbiome, dysbiosis, the power of probiotics to improve health and extend longevity. Anti-aging medicine itself was literally launched by this individual over 100 years ago. And, of course, the whole theory of how our immune systems work, we owe it to Eli Metchnikoff. So, Ms. Vikansky, take us back to 1904, to that probably crowded, hot, non-air-conditioned lecture hall in the month of June in Paris, where Eli Metchnikoff delivered his momentous lecture on the power of yogurt and probiotics.
Eli Metchnikoff gave this lecture entitled Old Age, and he brought with him a parrot, a 70-year-old parrot, and a dog, a 17-year-old dog. To him, this was a way of demonstrating, you know, what happens when you have a large intestine, you know, when you have a colon, and when you don't, because the birds don't have, or all have, like, almost no colon. And he showed everyone, like, this brightly feathered bird that looked, you know, you couldn't tell his age. And on the other hand, a dog who like us, which has a large intestine, and it was looking, you know, pretty old, you know, for his age, you know, for a 17-year-old dog. And this was his demonstration of how the intestinal flora, what today we call the microbiome, how, you know, to him it really causes aging. And then pretty, you know, soon in the lecture, he elaborated on this theory, new theory of his, that if you introduce good germs in the intestines, then maybe you can slow down aging. And he was being very careful, and he framed it all, and he said, well, maybe, you know, it can slow aging. And then he discussed those Bulgarians who live 100 years and they eat lots and lots of yogurt. But when the next day, all his all these, you know, caveats and all these cautionary notes that that he mentioned in the lecture, all that was edited out of the press reports. You know, it's kind of a familiar, you know, thing, mm-hmm. You know, the press likes a good
headline. They kind of dumbed it down, right?
They speeded things up. You know, they made it sound as if, you know, we're there already, and we already know that yogurt slows aging. This just sort of spread, like, you know.
It sounds like medical journalism hasn't made much progress since 1904, because, you know, we get sometimes very complicated medical stories. For instance, recently we had a story where people on a Mediterranean diet did okay when they consumed a little pasta, and we get headlines all through the newspapers that say, pasta is a great weight loss food. Eat as much pasta as you want. You know, that's sort of the way that things get reported.
This was also, you know, really conquered sort of the world, you know, because it started with Parisian newspapers, and it very quickly was picked up by American press, and I have clippings from all over, from Chicago, you know, saying that sour milk is elixir, you know.
Okay.
The secret of youth discovered at the Pasteur Institute, eternal youth, the fountain of youth.
Right.
And then everybody wanted to eat yogurt all of a sudden, and these businesses cropped up everywhere. There were shops that were selling yogurt, and also because you couldn't, you know, this was before effective refrigeration, so you couldn't easily transport it. So what many pharmacies sold was yogurt pills, in pill form, and then you could either just swallow the pill, mm-hmm. or you could put them into milk and make your own yogurt at home. And that's something that became very, very popular.
Right. So do-it-yourself yogurt makers, which are, you know, still popular these days, you incubate it. And what you have to do is you just take a starter and you add milk, and you got to warm it up to, I don't know, 102 degrees or something, or 90, 9 degrees, something around there. And lo and behold, after a couple of days, you got yogurt.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and then there were companies, in fact, Mechnikov himself agreed to link his name with a company that was called Le Fermant in France. In New York, there was a company, a subsidiary called the Ferment Company of New York, and they sold pills and bouillons with Bulgarian bacilli, with Bulgarian germs that were used for whatever, disinfecting the body and making yogurt and
so was Eli Mechnikov, a little bit of a showman? Was he trying to make a killing on this? Or did he find all this fuss and bother about this kind of curious? Because it sounds like he was sort of a solitary scientific researcher, not exactly a showman or a major entrepreneur. Ultimately, he was not the beneficiary of this explosion of interest in yogurt.
No, he wasn't. I mean, in fact, he had to fight all the time, people misusing his name. He did agree, he did allow one company to use his name. But he was, first of all, a believer. I mean, that's what he really was. He was a preacher. He wanted, to sort of spread the word about science. And then he very often got burnt, when it was distorted in the press and when he really put his reputation at stake because he was a highly respected scientist, and all of a sudden this was a very sort of borderline, a very kind of questionable medical practice, preaching, medical system.
Ultimately, and he won a Nobel Prize, but some people say that he won a Nobel Prize for the discovery of yogurt, but that's actually not accurate. It's for his discoveries in immunology, right?
Oh, no, of course. Yes, of course. And what's interesting is that he won it together with his biggest rival, the two of them. He and Paul Ehrlich won this 1908 Nobel Prize together. And they were barely on speaking terms.
And why is Paul Ehrlich important? I think people are familiar with the term magic bullet, the drug, find a bug, use a drug. And that was Paul Ehrlich's slogan. Was the magic bullet, mm-hmm. looking for a specific target where laser-like you could cure, you could eradicate pathogens and cure disease. So why was Mechnikov at odds with Paul Ehrlich?
Well, they basically discovered two major branches of the immune system, but they didn't know that at the time, and each thought that only his theory is
okay.
Right. Mechnikov thought that cells conquer disease, and Ehrlich thought either that antibodies, which are little, they're just small proteins,
mm-hmm.
He thought that these were his magic bullet. He thought
right.
that they hook up with the microbes, and that they find a perfect fit with the microbe. He used the metaphor of the lock and key that he borrowed from chemistry. And today we know that they, both, of course, are correct. And in fact, cells that make the antibodies, even though it's a different kind of cell, it's not the phagocyte,
mm-hmm.
but at the time, Ehrlich completely dismissed, the cell theory of Mechnikov. And Mechnikov tried very hard to somehow make peace with Ehrlich, but to the point that Mechnikov didn't go to Stockholm when he got the Nobel Prize.
Wow.
And he gave some kind of an excuse. He said that he was busy teaching at the Pasteur Institute. But, the Nobel Prize, it perhaps didn't have the sort of the same prestige it has today, but it was already very important because the amount of money was very, very big. So it was front page news, when someone won a Nobel Prize. So not to go to Stockholm was a pretty dramatic step. And I came to the conclusion that he basically, at the time, antibodies were the more accepted explanation of immunity. And he didn't want to play second fiddle to Ehrlich. So he went to Stockholm 6 years later and gave his Nobel lecture, but he wasn't present at the ceremony in December in Stockholm. The Russian ambassador received the medal and the diploma in his place.
So in effect, one discovered what's called humoral immunity. That would be Ehrlich. And Metchnikoff discovered cell-mediated immunity, and it turns out we have a kind of a redundant immune system that, you know, has two basic arms. They were both right, and their theories are now reconciled. So when it comes to anti-aging, is it correct to say that Metchnikoff actually coined the term gerontology, the study of aging? Is he instrumental in our understanding of the aging process?
Now, he was the first one to start studying aging systematically. I mean, when he himself, this was at the turn of the 20th century, when he himself in his 50s started looking into what's known about aging, and he was appalled. Not much is known, or like virtually nothing is known, but no one is studying it. There was some study of age-related diseases, but not the aging process itself. And he basically laid the foundations for it by coining this term and calling attention to it. And it's very important and very well-deserving area of study.
Now, it was his innovation, and I don't think that people really had dared to enunciate this view, that we could actually bend the aging curve. We could modify the aging process. It wasn't clear to Metchnikoff precisely how, but he advanced the theory that humans could live, you know, well past 100 if only they did the right things.
Yes, he believed that people could live till 150. But this was not, you know, not exactly. I think this was more sort of, you know, wishful thinking. Mm-hmm. And when he was dying, he was 71 when he ultimately died. And of course, all the newspapers, voiced, you know, everybody's disappointment, because people thought, well, you know, if he lives till, you know, more than 100, then maybe all his theories are right.
Or vindicated.
And when he was
right.
Dying, yeah, but he would be, yeah, but he was really worried that when he, not only that he himself was dying, but he was afraid that all his theories, you know, would die with him. But of course, the concept still, you know, is still very much there today, that if we understand aging, maybe we can do something about it. And he actually proposed that 100 years ago.
So is there such a thing as a commemoration? It's now 2016. It's the centennial of Eli Metchnikoff's mm-hmm. death. You know, I don't see a lot of big rallies or, you know, big, you know, Facebook, you know, pages or events. But is anybody celebrating or commemorating the centennial of Eli Metchnikoff?
Yes, there are two things I can mention. One is that there is a new Metchnikoff Museum in Ukraine, where he was born, and they're having on the day of his the anniversary, the 100 years of his centennial of his death on July 15th, they're having an all day conference dedicated to him. That's one thing that's happening. It'll be an internet, an online conference on the 15th, and then. In September, Cell Press is having a conference in Italy, which was in Sicily, where Metchnikoff first discovered, you know, the phagocytes. So it's sort of a sentimental kind of location. And the conference is called 100 Years of Phagocytes. And I think it's pretty amazing that 100 years later, there is this entire conference of really cutting-edge medicine that is all dedicated to the centennial of a scientist who died 100 years ago. I'm not sure there are many. I don't think there are many instances like that. So I think that's quite cool.
Yeah, he was a big deal, and but so interesting in some ways. You know, he was so prescient, you know, and so advanced in his thinking that we're still invoking many of his theories, and especially now with the renaissance of our understanding of the microbiome and the importance of auto-intoxication and endotoxins and leaky gut syndrome and how that impacts human health and even, you know, has an impact on aging. I mean, he was essentially right. He just didn't put all the pieces together. But also, you know, 100 years isn't really that long a time, when it comes to, you know, the long history of civilization. And the immense amount of progress that has been built upon the shoulders of these pioneers who first, like Louis Pasteur, Paul Ehrlich, and Eli Metchnikoff, who began their work in the 1800s. It's just incredible how far we've progressed in our very, very intricate, sophisticated understanding of precisely how the immune system works, from a rudimentary understanding that there were these little Pac-Man cells that ate invaders. We really know, we know a heck of a lot more now.
Oh, yes, absolutely. But what's interesting is that until, I would say fairly recently, maybe until about 20 years ago, these two systems, you know, the cells and the antibodies, or today they're called, one is called the innate system and the other is called the adaptive immunity, they were considered to be separate. And
right.
It's only like in the past 20 years or so that there's really a growing understanding that it's just, the system is a system and it needs, we need all its parts, you know, that to really understand immunity. So now it is a great deal of emphasis on that, and also much, much hope that new therapies and, you know, new advances will come from that.
So indeed, we owe a great debt of gratitude to Eli Metchnikoff when we embark on advanced immunotherapeutics, but also when we, eat a healthy fermented food, or when we take probiotics, right? Because probiotics, a very ancient concept, but rendered into modern science by virtue of discoveries like his.
Oh, yes, yes. The term was coined later, I think in the 50s, but certainly, you know, what he was, you know, the yogurt pills that we were talking about, absolutely, they were probiotics.
Yeah, and you know, what's interesting, too, is actually linking the concept of immunity to the concept of these probiotics. There actually are many studies now that show that merely giving probiotics to school children, for example, who have frequent absenteeism due to upper respiratory infections, it's actually been proven that you can lower school absenteeism and reduce the incidence of infections by giving probiotics to kids. We also know that germ-free animals, you know, you can take animals and you can completely eradicate their intestinal bacteria, and they don't do well. They have some very serious problems, immune problems, developmental problems. We also know that kids who take too many antibiotics, where their intestinal flora is disrupted, that they tend to be more obese, that they tend to have more degenerative diseases, and that they tend to get sick more often. So, it's a theory that has really stood the test of time. It truly is a visionary.
Yes, yeah, and I think Metchnikoff would have probably been particularly pleased by just what you said, you know, that these sort of two areas of his passion, the immunity and aging, are coming together, and we see how they're interrelated in the body.
Along with the microbiome. So that's, one of the reasons why, you know, we pay attention to, you know, what might seem like an obscure historical figure. I think I love the history of medicine, because the history of medicine, has so much to say to us about how iconoclasts, sometimes people who are very controversial in their era, end up, sticking to their guns and being right. He was not well accepted by his peers. In fact, he was at times ridiculed. Is that not the case?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when he first came up with his theory of immunity, it was called an Oriental fairy tale. An Oriental fairy tale born in the head of a Cossack.
Right, because there was a sort of a prejudice against, I think, Russian scientists. They thought that they, you know, weren't as sophisticated as the Western Europeans. That whole kind of snobism, I think, was in effect in those days. But the Russians had a very, a very advanced society, and they were advanced in many areas of science. And so it was, you know, basically prejudice against that corner of the world.
Right, but it's also, this theory did kind of sound crazy, you know, when you think about it, when you know, if nothing was absolutely known about immunity, and all of a sudden somebody says that we have these cells, you know, that eat germs, it did sound, a little weird, I would say.
Exactly. But so in the face of censure and in the face of skepticism, like many outstanding scientists, I think of others, you know, like Louis Semmelweis, who was the guy who told doctors to wash their hands when they used to just wipe their hands on their pants. They could go from one surgery to the other without sterile procedure. He was actually almost hounded into a lunatic asylum for saying that, you know, doctors were spreading germs when they went from patient to patient with dirty hands. Nikola Tesla is, you know, was another guy who nobody listened to him. And now, 100 years later, we have a, you know, a vast automotive empire, Tesla Motors, that commemorates his discoveries. I mean, it's really interesting how these individuals, sometimes fight against prevailing skepticism and, their theories are borne out.
Right, you know, I think many people in Mexico space would have given up, you know, in the face of all the resistance that he encountered, that he ran into with his theory. But he was determined to fight. It was like never a moment when, you know, when he was going to drop it. And he kept coming up with new and more and more evidence. And eventually he, you know, he did become accepted. It was slow, you know, it was slower than his rivals, the rival theory. But, you know, he did in the end.
Well, thank you for breathing life into the story of Eli Metchnikoff in your wonderful book, Immunity, How Eli Metchnikoff Changed the Course of Modern Medicine. The book is by today's guest, Luba Vikansky, and you can find the book, the usual sources. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for your interest. It was a pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure.